where then we can just take the segments
that you need and that you want. Yeah.
But you know, since you've
been stage. Rewarding, it really is. Even if it's a gasp, and I taught for a while too. I taught acting, and teaching made me become a better actor. And the reason it made me become a better actor is because suddenly I had to analyze why I was doing this or saying that, or taking this long pause, or so that I could explain it to the students. It all came so naturally to me that I did it without thinking. It was built in. And that's why even to this day, I'll tell people, I cannot teach you how to become an actor. I can only show you how to teach yourself.
What's the most important quality?
To know and to understand the emotions of particular people under particular circumstances. Because in order to teach acting, you have to have a working definition. And my working definition was simple. I mean, naturally, I can go on for hours about a definition of acting. But my simple one-sentence working definition: acting is the art. Because it is, after all, an art. Acting is the art of seeming to be natural as a particular person under particular circumstances. And, of course, my novice students would argue, oh, no, Mr. Murray, it's the art of being natural. Being. I said, no, it's not the art of being natural. It is the art of seeming to be natural. When you're on that stage, you are damn well aware that when you light this cigarette, that doorbell is going to ring. And you better not show the audience you're anticipating it. When you start to say a sentence and then turn to someone else and say something else, you are aware that that's what you're supposed to do, and you make that transition because you had a thought, you see. And the thought must be there first, so that you really have to live this thing on stage. But yet you're never being, you're seeming to be. You still have to hold yourself away from it so that you can judge what is happening. So not everybody delivers the same lines the same way every night. I never gave the same performance twice, and the people that I worked with didn't. So if someone, if they get carried away and get too hysterical on a particular thing, you've got to give your answer on a note that would match the tone that they have used, that fits, that so it all rolls along as the objective is of anything is the scene itself of what the author wishes to expound to the audience. And like I say, we had one play that there was, to me, this was the delicious moment in the play. Charles Laughton did this in London, and they never played it on Broadway. It was a play called Payment Deferred, in which he, at the beginning, murders his wife's nephew, who comes to visit and exposes a lot of money, and he's having money troubles, you see. And he murders him and buries him in the garden. Anyway, they are now wealthy. They have all this gorgeous thing, you see, and he's cheating on his wife with a couturier from around the corner. he has sent his wife off to Brighton so he can have a week with this broad. Well, she's wangling him around her little finger. She's a French woman. Oh, she's, but mon chéri, she's, I must have the dollar. She's, because I need 14 more pounds today, and tomorrow I will have the bill from the... You know? And she's getting money out of him left and right, you see. Well, of course, when she's getting the money out of him, you look out into that audience, and you see the men, wouldn't happen to me, you know. And the women, serves it right. Now there is a knock on the door unexpectedly, and he's writing the check, you see. And he's, now who in the hell is that? And as I handed the check, the voice comes through the door. It's me, Will. I said, oh, it's my wife. Well, on that, it's me, Will, it's my wife. There is this gasp from the audience, you see. But at the same time, the gasp is from the men. And there's a delightful, aha, now he'll get it, from the women. I mean, and you can just feel it. They sit up in their seats. And this is what I mean when I say audience reaction. I don't necessarily mean applause or laughter in a comedy. And although I prefer comedy, one must be able to do drama well in order to be able to do comedy. And that's... a lot of people don't realize that, though. That comedy comes later. This is why people like Milton Berle and the marvelous thing that Danny Kaye did in the Skokie television show. Fantastic, underplayed performance that was just so perceptive and so delightful. I felt the script aired. I felt that I didn't like the explanations at the end. I felt that the author cheated, and it's like writing something with a narration. Except for documentary things where you need narration, but it's almost like flashbacks, you know. It's cheating, but at any rate, the performance of a great comedian was magnificent in a dramatic role. And Milton Berle has shown us this too. Bob Hope has done some fabulous performances dramatically. And many of our good comedians, because you must be able to do the drama first in order to achieve the timing for the comedy.
It must be even more difficult for a well-known comedian to overcome the tendency of the audience to laugh.
Right.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. Some people can get a laugh just on an entrance. I've seen Henny Youngman walk out there and they just, you know, they you know, they die. They but of course Henny turns around and he milks it, you see, because he'll go, you know, and he'll pick up the violin or put it under his chin or put the violin down. Shecky Green gave a performance last night in something on television. Yep. A fine comedian, and yet last night he gave
the fall
a very...
Guy. Huh? The Fall Guy.
The Fall Guy. He gave a very dramatic performance that was rather good, but not surprising, you see. A lot of people are surprised that they're capable of doing this. But again, I say that they must be able to do the drama first. I was friendly... she's dead now. She lost a foot. Toadie Fields. I was friendly with Toadie Fields. And Toadie was truly a very serious person. And a delightful person, a person who cared about other people. But yet she was a great natural comedian. You know, and she used her audience. And she knew when to be serious and when to get the comedy in. And this is important, too, when you're holding down a stage, and especially if you're doing what we call a stand-up comedy act. There are times when you want to get serious. There are times when you want to pull a little pathos.
What about when you're pitching?
Yeah, same thing. Yeah, there are moments when I'm very serious. There are other moments when I certainly strive to get humor into the pitch. And also when you have to stall for time. you know, because I've got a rhythm as I pass out the bags and take the money. I'm doing this, and that lady there wants one, and you want one too. I can only serve 11 more, and here's another one over here. And by the way, I want to make you all a promise. Now, I got 7 people still digging for money, you see. And I go into the promise that I'll permit them to respend the 5. And I'll bet no one has ever spent the same money twice in their entire life. But I'll show you how far a large concern will go when they know they have sincere advertisers and when they have confidence in their own products. Now, here's a lady over here. That's a 20, lady. Don't go away without change. I always say that. Nobody ever goes. You know, now I'm making change. One day a lady gave me a $100 bill. I ran 1/2 mile down the Atlantic City boardwalk. She caught me anyway. There's yours over here and another one over here. And, a 50 lady? Certainly. I can change anything but a married lady's name. Send it up. And all these different... They sound unrehearsed, but they're in there. They're never in there in the same place twice, you see. Now maybe I've offered 20 sets and only 15 people have sent up money, you see. Now I can still serve 5 more people. Is there anyone else who wants to send in their 5 right now before you see all the things I put in that bag? Once I fill up the bags, I don't let anyone get in on it later. See, I don't let you bet on the race after the race is run. Nothing I'd like better than to walk up to that $5 window at any track in the world and say, give me 5 on the horse that just came in first. Well, you can't do that. That's result betting. That's against the law. I think I can show you all I'm a darn good horse to bet on before the race is run. Gentleman over here wants one. Here's another one over here. I didn't mean to coax you, lady. I learnt my lesson. I coaxed a pretty girl once. I had to marry her. It's all right, sir. I'm not sorry. That's why I won't be a worker so darn hard. There's another one here. And the money keeps coming, you see. So that there are ways to, you know. These are all... You can't... No one ever taught me these things. They came. They're all natural kind of moves with timing and with an awareness of what is happening all around me. One time I was doing a pitch, I don't even remember what it was, I think it was the comb brush, the lanolin, and the shampoo, and there's a woman in my audience, and this is in a store, in a 5 and dime store, and she's wearing an over-the-shoulder purse, and she's got a little kid with her about 6 years old, and the kid was really a nuisance, you know, the kid was picking things up, and as a matter of fact, at one point I said, leave it alone, kid, I'll give you some razor blades to play with. Yeah, and you know, but she had a man come up behind her, and when the kid annoyed her, she moved the kid from this side to that side, and when she did, she took the purse off here and she moved the purse to this side. He moved over to that side. Now, I never saw him reach for the bag or anything like that, but at that point, I said, oh, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I do have to warn you. The police have been in and told us to watch out for a pickpocket. Please, all the ladies who have shoulder bags, would you kindly clutch them in front of you whenever you're in a crowd? And I went right out. He walked right out of there. You know, he knew I was hip. Do you know what I mean? But can you imagine what happens when a woman opens her purse, reaches for her money thing, and says, my God, I've been robbed. You know, there goes your pitch. It's like the time the woman gave birth in front of me.
What?
Yeah. I delivered the baby. I cut the cord, tied the knot, went back in and finished the pitch.
No.
Yeah. And saved one for her as they were wheeling her out on the stretcher.
I don't know if you have to believe
it. Yeah,
I got witnesses. But I've had some strange things happen. We had a guy who used to appear in this one store whenever it rained, you see. And he wore a raincoat. And I noticed that whenever he stood next to some woman, she would turn red and disappear. So I couldn't make a comment or anything, but I went to the manager of the store And he said, well, he says, I got a little gal up in the office that she ain't afraid of anything. And he says, I'll send her down, let her stand in your crowd, you see. Well, sure enough, he picked on her. Well, she grabbed hold of what he was shoving at her, and she held on to him until the police came. But you get all kinds, you know. Well, as a theatrical person, the don't whistle in the dressing room is not so much a superstition as much of it as it is when someone is concentrating on lines, going over lines in their head, thinking of movement, especially on opening nights, on shows you haven't done before. A whistle can be a very annoying thing. It can grate on the ears. It's like listening to rock and roll. But as far as in the pitch business, I don't really know of any.
There's certain areas that you don't like to, like, you should say, I don't play that city, or, you know, don't go there. It's really a terrible place.
I haven't found one yet. You know, to me, if you treat people right, and if you talk to them, not at them, and you present something properly, and it has value, and you're not looking to beat them out of their money. I've once cracked to Joe, and the one thing I'm so proud of is that I can make a living anywhere in the English-speaking world. Because, you know, people are the same. And as long as I can talk the language. Now, when I busted my hip, and I couldn't stand up to pitch. I'm one of the few pitchmen who sits down to pitch. See, I was told I'd never walk again. But as soon as I was out of the hospital, the first thing I did was I went to Washington with the production of A Man Who Came to Dinner. Then I came back from that. And by that time, I'd learned how to manipulate the crutches a little. So I got 2 milk boxes and a bar stool. And we put the bar stool up on top of the milk boxes, and I'd climb up on the milk boxes, plunk my fanny on the bar stool, lay the crutches along the counter, and I'd go to work. And to this day, I'm uncomfortable standing up to pitch. I sit down to pitch. And I do my pitch seated.
On a stool?
On a stool. Yeah. Yeah, on top of 2 boxes.
Are there like certain days...
No, I've never heard of that. No, not at all. I'm sure there are superstitions and you know, in every business, but I don't believe in them. Well, don't break a mirror, you have 7 years bad luck. I know this woman broke a great big mirror. She didn't have no 7 years bad luck. She got killed the next day in an automobile accident. Yeah.
Well, how did you end up settling down here in Gibson?
Well, when I decided that I wanted to sell the dog show, I figured the smartest place to get a good buyer who would care for the dogs and who would understand their value was here in Gibsonton. I knew of Gibsonton. I'd been in the Tampa area before. And I'd been in Gibsonton, but I'd never actually lived in Gibsonton. So I came down here to Gibsonton, and I settled down here. And I sold the dog show, and I'm working the flea markets and the farmers markets, and doing my pitching and working some of the stores.
So how long have you been in this area?
1969 or 70 I came here. So it's been about 11 years. There might be a couple of thousand pitchmen around the country. There may be 300 or 400 really good pitchmen. There might be a couple of thousand demonstrators around the country, and 200 or 300 really good pitchmen. And as far as the auction people are concerned, the ones who do that auction, and we got an hour and a half to do the auction. Sometimes when you're doing a stand-up auction at a fair, you're only given an hour. You see, and you got to take in as much money as you can. You're working strictly on commission. It's all percentage. And I would say that there are less than 30 who are truly capable workers. And, you know, who know what they're doing and who get what they can from the potential that is there to be gotten. I don't know. The pitchman can make a buck even when there is a recession or perhaps even a depression. And the man to tell you that is a great guy named Joe Hilton. Now, if you want to hear stories, I got to steer you to Joe Hilton. Joe has been doing the pen pitch lately, but he's done in a very abbreviated version, and he never learned my pen pitch. He's an old pitchman from way back, calls himself a faker, F-A-K-I-R. And Joe has worked everything from selling books for 10 cents door-to-door and insurance for a penny a week or whatever. And he can go on for hours upon hours. The man has to be well into his 70s. He is hard of hearing at the moment, but he won't wear a hearing aid, so you kind of got to talk up to him, and then he shouts back at you. but he's great people. He lives here. He used to live in Gibsonton. He now lives about 3 miles north of Gibsonton. Joe Hilton. I can give you the phone number. Well, when I go inside, I'll dig out the phone number for you, all right? And his wife, she does the Social Security cards. She makes Social Security cards for people, IDs and Social Security cards. And they're great people, both of them. Really nice people.
Are there any women?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. We were over at Roberta Putty's Tuesday, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Tuesday night. Roberta had us over for dinner. She pitches the TFAL. TFAL.
It's like the Teflon pots and pans.
But a TFAL, and it's imported from France. And for years, she had all the Sears stores in 11 states. She had over 36 stores that she put her own workers in and then supplied the merchandise to. She has a little mansion over in Riverview. Sears has bought their own product. I can't call it TFAL because that's a brand name.
Yeah.
But they've bought their own product. They've put in their own. See, that's the trouble. These stores see you taking money on something, and they think they can do it better than you. And they can't. They can't. Eventually, they hurt themselves. They really should leave it to an expert.
Well, does she, you mentioned that she has people she sends out. Does she go out?
Oh, she goes out. She works too. Yeah, she does pitches. Now, it might be very interesting to get Roberta up there for your little spring festival and get her to pitch the TFAL. I don't know what Joe would pitch up there. If I'm pitching the pens, I don't know what he would pitch up there. He's in semi-retirement now. He works on the telephone now.
Do you know anyone who's pitching medicine right now? See, when we do present the area, we're going to have two people who do medicine show with teams up there. We used to work the old medicine show.
Who have you got?
Noel.
Who?
The Knowles, Bob and
May. Oh, Bob and May Knowles. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're
leaving the chimps at home?
Yeah. The Knowles are, yes. And they're going to be up, and they're going to be doing some of the old routines that they used to do. You know,
I never saw them work, but I heard they're sensational.
They are. Yeah. And May, you know, she can talk for hours about what the medicine show was like, right, and all that. But they don't, of course, her father used to be the pitcher.
Yeah.
And that we don't have a pitcher for the medicine show. I mean, perhaps.
Well, I, as I say, I used to do the foot bomb pitch.
Yeah.
And I did a eucalyptus oil pitch. And it was a little tough doing that eucalyptus oil in New York in the winter. I'd catch these terrible colds, you know. Part of the pitch wasn't. Now, girls, if you got a youngster in school, just dampen a Kleenex with some of this and put it in their pocket. You can't catch a cold if you're.
Not real convincing.
And I did
for demonstration purposes, just to, you know, yeah, we did put together a little medicine show.
And I did the hair pitch.
The hair time?
Yeah. Yeah, girls, do you bake fries, do you cook your hair? Do you? I wrote that. And of course, now I put comedy into that too, you see. Again, in an attempt to be honest. Now, ladies, if your husband is bald, for heaven's sakes, leave him alone. Don't hassle him about this. Just love him the way he is. Even my lanolin won't help, because you have to have living follicles in order to grow hair. And so just love him the way he is. And I had a kid who worked for me, had gorgeous hair, and he went to a party one time, got drunk, and they shaved his head. He didn't want to work. I said, just add this line at that spot. You add the line. And if I knew then what I know now about the health and care of the scalp and hair, I'd still have mine. Now, the large size is $5 this morning. and it made no difference. He sold just as... but another line I used to add... What happens? And the men are worse than the women when it comes to hair. Vain? What does the average man do? He goes in, he knows, he realizes he's losing his hair. Every morning he goes in the bathroom, he takes inventory. Now, does he go to a reputable physician, a dermatologist, a doctor who can be helpful? No. He goes to the corner barber who has a billiard ball just like his. You see? And he says, Joe, the hair's falling out. What do you think I ought to do? Joe grabs this bottle that he gets a commission for selling, and he says, you got to shake some of this on it every day. Well, I'm not going to mention any brands, ladies and gentlemen. I picked up the bottle. I'm not going to mention any brand names, but this, according to the label, is 90% alcohol. Now, let me ask you, as intelligent people, do you really think alcohol would grow hair? If alcohol would grow hair, there'd be loads of fur-lined stomachs walking around out there. So, but you get the humor in, you get them laughing. I used to do a pitch that they didn't know was a pitch until I brought out the product and asked for money. I did a health pitch. I did a pitch on vegetables, the assimilation of the lanolin and organic materials, and did a whole health pitch. As a matter of fact, one day, these two guys with beards came back at the end of this thing, and they said to me, "Do you say this would cure my athlete's foot?" And I said, "No, sir. I never said cure. I said that it would help bring relief to athlete's foot, and it might assist in the control of the spreading of the athlete's foot disease. But I never said cure." The other one said, "See, I told you." Well, it turned out that they were with an orthopedic thing. They were having a convention in Allentown the following week, and they gave me $100 to come up and give a lecture on the health and care of the feet. these were bone men, though, but they wanted something about the feet, and there were podiatrists there too. But
wonderful.
Do you want to hear that tape? Or,
yeah.
Or,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Fairly soon. But,
yeah. Okay. We're all right. Done.
Do you want the pleasure that can pick it up or not?